Greetings, everyone. I'm AC Mensa, and this is Currently in Dance, where we jump into stories published by the Dance Current magazine. Today, Colette Coco Murray is back with us to continue our deep dive into Carnival. And the song you just heard, chosen by Coco, was Do We Ting by Lord Nelson and Kes. This collaboration pays homage to the history and art form of calypso. I have been in the industry for 15 years, and I have seen many people go up on stage to perform a dance that is not a part of their culture and not want to take responsibility for what they created. When I think of my practice doing Afrofusion and storytelling, I am actively seeking a connection to source and my ancestors. Those same ancestors are connected to the root that links Africa to the Caribbean. So when I participate at Carnival en Masse, I think of how that spirit of Carnival exists in my body because of that ancestral connection. There is a freedom that I am trying to possess every time I dance. So when I dance, I too am trying to embody, emancipate, and celebrate all that has come before and after me. I realized that we didn't get a chance to get into this in our last episode, so I wanted to make this conversation tangible for the dance community and how Toronto Caribbean Carnival is very much intertwined with the industry. And with Carnival coming up in the city this weekend, I'm excited to say I'm back with Colette Coco Murray, a dance performer, instructor, mentor, cultural arts programmer, and PhD candidate at York University. And we are going to get into it. Welcome, Coco.
Good afternoon, AC. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Before we jump into anything, how was the Mocha Jumpy Parade?
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. What can I say? Just to see all the children and the youth up on their stilts, even myself managing everything, it was great to just embody the character. It was great to move through time and space. We all had wings. So that was an extra dimension to work with while we were on stilts. And just moving with the music and the community supporting us and each of our individualities still came together as a collective as we moved throughout the parade route at the Bentway. It was great. It was just good to be, you know, in person and having a parade again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's been so long. That's wonderful. So huge congrats to you. And now we're going to get into it.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have deep roots to the continent as well as the Caribbean. Can you explain your connection to these two cultures and how you found you through dance?
Well, let's contextualize this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yes, I am Toronto born. So I'm Canadian in that sense. But my family is from Guyana, from South America. So the Afro-Guyanese lineage, it goes back to Central and West Africa. So we're part of four ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. So my connection really is to the West African dance art forms, but also to the Caribbean folk art forms. And of course, it's derivatives that come to North America. So I've done my work and I still continue to do my studies and training and engagement with the dance vernaculars because the Afro-diasporic ancestral cultures and even the contemporary cultures is just so much richness to investigate and to unpack and also to acknowledge the generational cultural information that's there. I guess my life purpose has been to immerse myself in all things Afro-diasporic. Mm-hmm. But in terms of dance, it's the movement, it's the rhythms, it's the cultural context, the social context, just to understand and immerse myself in all of it for as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing practice.
Wonderful. Yes. And it that ongoing practice leads me, you know, last week we spoke about Carnival, the origins of Carnival, how the culture can get appropriated. But we didn't actually talk about how dance actually folds into the mix. You know, the conversation was so rich. So that's why we needed to break it into two episodes. So to break it down for those who might not be familiar, can you enlighten us on how Caribbean culture is intertwined with the dance community?
Intertwined with our Toronto dance community?
Yes, yes, yes. Let's make it specific.
Yeah, there's a history that people are not aware of. Yes, there's been many migrants that arrived with their dance practices, just not documented as well. Mm-hmm. And as a doctoral student in the dance studies department at York, I'm also trying to unpack, like, where are the stories and how are we being documented? And being part of this Caribbean community, I would say there's a point from the 70s all the way up until the present, where there's been different migrants who formed dance companies in the Toronto community from 1975 into the 80s, into the 90s, the 2000s. There's generations of companies who have either been from Trinidad, from Barbados, across the islands, that have arrived, and they have their dance practices that they brought forth. And it's just a matter of them having to, you know, navigate the space in the city to teach and to practice and to form their companies and to perform their narratives and their stories. And a lot of that has been a lot of entrepreneurial efforts. Mm-hmm. Before funding was even offered or even approved.
Yes.
For all of these talented companies and groups. So my entry also is with, you know, taking dance classes, training with these companies, performing on stages and festivals with some of the companies. Yeah, I'm just one of the generations that have interacted with this web mm-hmm. that people may not be aware of.
And even just to follow up, you know, when people obviously think of Africa, they think of the monolith. And with the Caribbean, it's the same thing. So recognizing the diversity of how each island differs in terms of movement practice, you know, there might be a similarity across all islands, but there's still a difference in carnival practices and how they approach and their art form of dance is shifts from island to island. So I think it's also really important that we acknowledge all of the people, especially in Toronto. You know, we have a legacy of ballet, Creole, and Copa, but there's many others that may not have survived the test of time as they have for a lot of different reasons that we won't get into. But it's also great to acknowledge. I'm going to say wonderful thank you, and we are going to be right back with a quick break, and we're going to get back into it. Currently in Dance is brought to you by investwithtim.ca. Tim Ziegler is a financial security advisor and investment representative in Canada. After a 12-year acting career, he now works with Canadian artists on their finances. And believe me, having an artist look after your finances, it makes a difference. Talk to Tim about investments, about life insurance, about debt. Ask about saving to buy a home. Bring your questions and bring your parents. This stuff is important. Check out investwithtim.ca. Welcome back, everyone. Coco, I think it's important to recognize that in looking to others when it comes to appropriation, we also need to look to ourselves. Oftentimes, the folks who are calling out are also the ones doing the appropriating. Your birthright, unfortunately, isn't a pass to knowledge. How do we begin to address appropriation in the dance community, which has normalized the act of taking without knowledge?
Well, you got to remember, we're coming from colonial legacies, and I am an Afro-descendant of ancestors who have been colonized by the British slave trade. So these ways of operating and structuring how we move in society, this capitalistic structure, and of course religion also playing a role in what was acceptable, what was not,
although we navigated with what we came to these displaced bodies in the islands with, I find that a lot of us weren't allowed to practice what we wanted because we were still facing oppression. So people still did what they could in the midst of the limitations. You still practice, but then a lot of people have been far removed. And a lot of people, generations did not learn, and then you weren't encouraged to learn. That creates a lot of division within our own communities, so that when we talk about appropriating, it just means, when do we do the work to reclaim and to investigate and to research to try to get back to the roots, engaging in, you know, of course, the Sankofa process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if people want to do it, do you have the intention? Do you have the willingness to even do that work? It's a lot. There's a lot of fragmented pieces. Things are not documented. And then depends if oral history is even passed on. Even the tactile history, is it passed on? Rhythmic histories, is it passed on? While cultural practices may continue or may have changed and may have been syncretized, I would say we have to look at ourselves and say, what's my positionality in this? This is why I always tell people that I am learning from cultures that I don't belong to. Even though I may be an Afro descendant, my culture is different to the cultures that I study. And because I am entering into different communities, I have to be mindful and also be moving with a sense of ethics on how I'm going to approach the information, because I'm not born in that community. I'm not part of the lineage of some of the families. I'm just becoming aware and studying and working with master teachers who are willing to work with me. And I would say for those who really want to delve in, I encourage us to do so. But I would also say we got to be aware of how we are moving and how we are and our responsibility with the information that we're acquiring, whether it's rhythm, whether it's dance, whether it's the social and the history and the culture, all of it. We have to be responsible with what we're acquiring, even if we are within the diaspora community.
Mm-hmm. And you touched on like the bit about responsibility is actually leading into the next question. But before I go into that, there's so much richness, because it's I think oftentimes what happens in this industry is that, oh, I've taken classes, therefore I know, or, oh, I've studied with this one person, so therefore I know. And there's not enough understanding of where these art forms come from and seeing it as an art form and not just claiming the fact that I'm from there and that is enough. And we need to start questioning that both as teachers and as students to be able to acknowledge that. And I'm going to go... because I don't want to regulate people's choices or their bodies and what feels right for them, something I hear often. As you said, we have to take responsibility for those choices. So if you choose to do something as a choreographer, you should be able to defend it. You should be able to look at it and say, this is the reason why I'm doing this as a choreographer, as a dancer. And this is a very tricky topic because people are very sensitive about their art and how they want to express themselves, and they want to be able to have that freedom. But the politics, when it comes to appropriating Black culture, especially hearing the community after the racial reckoning, how do we unpack who is responsible?
Mm-hmm. Who is responsible? Again, you know, accrediting where information comes from. That's another aspect that people don't even engage in. Do you know the ethnic group? Do you know the meaning of a particular dance, the history that informed it, the politics that surrounds it? And do you know the rhythmic vocabulary? Because again, a few classes doesn't make you an expert. The learning process is ongoing. So I find that people have to understand that if you're stepping into the dance community, this is our lives. This is something that we are investing in, And we are also dedicated to learning on a continuum versus just a contemporary moment and then elevating ourselves to be the expert.
Yes.
I never call myself an expert. I've been going to school for many years. I still know there's so much for me to learn. And of course, I learn from many people. And I choose intentionally to learn from different people because I can learn some other nuance from someone else. Yeah, this is very tricky because who has the authority? I still look at you still would have elders in the community that would have opinions about this.
Yeah.
Because they will see a generation maybe not honor the things that they have once been able to do and hold so dear if they're not active anymore. Are people even approaching elders to have conversations? Are the elders approachable?
Mm.
The middle generation, you know, is it my responsibility to connect the younger generations to the elders? Like there's so much layers to this. So I would say the authority would lie in the ethnic communities. Yes, we do need to give credit. I also try to give credit because the context has to happen before movement for me even happens. If I'm going into a dance class or workshop, have some dialogue with students because it's more than just, let's just move for the gram. Let's just move for a video. This is people's livelihoods that we have in our hands through movement vernacular. You know, there's too many repetitive stories about how Black dance and Afro-diasporic movement has been co-opted and appropriated for other genres. Mm-hmm. Someone else will represent someone else's work and you're not crediting who it's from. This has been happening for centuries.
Yep.
And we have to change that. So given this racial climate, we're going to hold people accountable. And it's just how we do it. I feel that we should have more conversations because a call out will happen depending on the audience, but also be open for the call in so that we can have conversations and then humbly listen to the information, sit back, reflect, think about your complicity, think about your privilege, think about your access, and think about, well, what am I representing and why? Because sometimes people don't know their purpose. It's just what's trendy, what's popular, and I'm excited and I want to be a part of that.
Yes. I think it's huge right now with the call in versus the call out. And sometimes people blur the lines. And this is where it comes back to, like, how do you defend your art? I can recognize as a teacher what my responsibility is at the front of the room. But please go to other people and diversify that knowledge. Please go and learn. But I know that I can be in front of the room and I can have the conversations with you. You know, I had rehearsal earlier today and we ended up in a big conversation in preparation for the carnival performance. Just about the culture, how our parents may not be grooming us into the culture. I was fortunate to have that happen for my family, but not a lot of families. When you come here as immigrants, we assimilate. And then in choosing to assimilate, that means that you're not choosing to pass that culture down. And then you end up trying to weave together broken pieces of remembering. And for some people, they go and study and enough. And for others, they just take those broken pieces and try to make them whole, but they're not. There's things that we have to fill into those gaps that are really going to be able to ensure that when we do speak as a community, when we do come together in conversation as a community, this is what needs to be at the foundation. How do we fill these broken pieces? How do we come to a community to make it whole? You know, even if we may not always have supportive elders, or when we do, how do we ensure that intergenerationally, people that are coming up can understand the work of our generation and prior to, and those that are coming after us, in order to ensure that we are doing the work to be able to be champions in our own community. Coming up into the next question, dance is visual. There are no subtitles, unfortunately. And even if you write something in the program, it's oftentimes you can't guarantee that people are going to see it. As a teacher in this city, many people take my classes, but they don't look like me. sometimes our own communities may not actually want to study the forms that are of their own heritage. So when we are thinking about dance education and looking into the fine print or subtitles, where does the accountability lie? In the teacher, in the student, in the studio, or the institution?
All of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to approach this from many angles. Okay, so the accountability lies, again, any space we're in, us that engage as Afro descendants, we will use that space and make it about the dance because the activity is going to happen where we choose for it to happen. So if we're talking about dance education, if I'm teaching in a park, if I'm in a parking lot, if I'm on the street, in the parade like I was this past Saturday, in a community, in a park, I'm still educating. If I'm in an institution, which I am, I find it's multi-layered because the institution has responsibility, but it depends if the institution has the practitioners and they have consciously hired practitioners that are versed and you don't silence their voices when they arrive. And also if you also want to recruit and attract students that represent the diversity of your communities, but, and I say but, when they arrive, you're still promoting a Western, Eurocentric, contemporary, modern, or modern adjacent experience, that they don't see that their art forms from their communities are even on an equal level playing field. So the institution's responsible, the people who are hired, the faculty are responsible. The students then have the responsibility as an individual. If I'm not going to get the education here, I either have to investigate on my own externally from the institution and find people within the industry that I can approach and I can learn from and study with. Also, the library, what can you find? Not much. YouTube, people upload anything on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's still information, but how do you know to decipher and filter what is actually what you're supposed to learn? So it becomes an individual effort and sometimes more heavily so to be accountable in seeking people who actually know what they're talking about, are well-versed, and can connect you to a network of people who also know and also can connect you to the culture and the communities. I myself, like you, like I've done work where intentionally I was trying to create spaces so that Afro descendants, Afro Canadians, people like myself who had to go and seek and search and find, where do I get access to this performing art form? Where do I get access to the culture and the information? So I had to take on that responsibility to be accountable, to continue to do that year after year, decade after decade. And then in terms of studio spaces, again, studios are going to follow an economic model and they're not going to think about, am I part of dance education or am I just part of an industry that's just going to create a model for classes and students and let's just market and demand and let's just leave it there. I think everybody is accountable, but it really falls on the individual to do all the work.
We got to take another quick break. We have to pay these bills. We will be right back. The Fifth Dance is a drop-in dance studio in downtown Toronto for adults of all levels, pre-professional students, and professional dancers. They offer contemporary conditioning classes and ballet from absolute beginner to advanced. Sign up on their website at www.thefifthdance.com or email them at thefifthdance@gmail.com with any questions. This podcast is also sponsored by The Shoe Room. The Shoe Room at Canada's National Ballet School is Canada's premier ballet boutique. With a collection of over 8,000 pointe shoes, our expert fitters can help you find your perfect pair in-store or virtually. Visit www.theshoeroom.ca to book your appointment today. For $15 off your next $50 purchase, use code DC22 during checkout. Alrighty, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me, Coco. Well, for me, I'll speak from a me sense because we were talking about the commercial dance scene. In the commercial space, you can see the influence, you know, Caribbean, African movement that has influenced the space. So when we think of like Rihanna's work video, which I was in, and how that video had influenced society, for better or for worse, in terms of how people saw it, the media has a very interesting portrayal of that video simply because of how people were dancing. The vibe on set for me was the ultimate like party, fete, dance hall experience. But when we think of carnival, how does the media play a role in policing our bodies?
I would say the media, what I see is the media will, well, today we have this hypersexuality that's going on that wasn't there before. And in terms of getting carnival in the media, I see there has been some intention with like reality TV to do some programming or to do some carnival footage where the reality stars would go to the Caribbean and you would probably put some steel pans in the background. You might have one dance troupe that comes in, but it's still presented in terms of a tourist industry format versus the actual art form and cultural practice. So I find that the media still places Caribbean practices in terms of tourism, even though there's so many wonderful artists that are traveling and touring and doing all this work and choreographing. Social media helps to market individual dancers and choreographers better if they use the platform correctly. So the media itself, we can't rely on them to bring the art form forward. Because again, how many years am I going to look at award shows and never see a soca artist and soca dancers or even any cultural specific art form on those stages? We're only now starting to see Afrobeats. But that's only because of the, of course, the magnitude of what those artists are doing. But soca has been around prior to that. Again, it's only Caribana, the street parade is what I'm seeing, versus the rest of the cultural aspects. This week, we'll see a lot of snippets on our media of the individual events, which is better. But the dance is sometimes always missing from the conversation. It just focuses on the presentation, the visual, and the art of the mass building. But they're ignoring the movement that makes that all of those things come alive. If the pan is playing, how they're moving emphasizes how that pan is also being played as well. And then on parade day, you'll never see an interview with a dancer. And I would like for that to happen.
So just to even follow up on that, like how would you describe the dancer's voice within the carnival experience for people that may not understand or see it on TV and might have a very different bias or understanding of what they think the movement means?
There's so much movement. So even there isn't a movement. There's so many vernaculars that are happening. There's so many individual choices that are happening within each individual's rhythmic personality that's coming out. So I would say our feet, you know, whether it's tripping along the road, you know, in having that relationship with the earth as we dragging our feet and stomping in rhythmic, you know, unison, or we would have our knees bent to continue that grounded relationship, or we have our pelvic contractions and our gyrations and winding our waist, you know? So like all of that represents, like when we think about our West African practices, those parts of the body, that's about creation. That's about life. That's where things have been initiated in the core, in the pelvic region. And then you think about the torso. The torso is whether it's angled to the left, angled to the right, you bend it back, you bend it forward. Like this is an assertive body that's moving. It's an ambitious body. Our arms are not accessories. They're intentional intentional parts of our body that are communicating along rhythmically with our body. So that polycentric relationship, the polycentrism that's all happening at the same time. And I could close my eyes and put my hand in the air and how I'm waving and how I'm jumping and how I'm doing whatever rhythmic choreography that could be happening, which will be different from yours, which will be different from mine. But together, those individual personalities are still in collective unison. So when we are dancing, it's not something sexual. It is an embodying, we have a relationship with rhythm, that vibration, how we feel about the music, how we see the music, like how we visually look as we engage in the vernaculars with the music. All of that is about connecting with this deep spirit in our soul, with our community, with our cultures. We are doing this for a purpose. I'm freeing up myself because I've been limited all year long and I'm waiting for the carnival to emancipate. And as people who know, I always say this every year, I emancipate my waist.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens on the road.
That's what happens all the time. That excitement, that release, that even if I close my eyes and I'm hearing the engine of the rhythm section and how that drives me, if I'm hearing the blowing of the conch shell, if I'm hearing the steel pan, or I'm hearing that live band with that artist sing that particular song, there is a lot that's going on. And we're not just, oh, we're just jumping up and down and jump and wave. There's so much happening. It's a reclaiming of multiple vernaculars, multiple rhythms, multiple histories, multiple present experiences.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think society, media only focuses on the sexualization versus the history, versus the depth that carnival is?
Again, it's how our bodies were described by the missionaries who came in contact with our ancestors. They described our bodies and our movement as beyond primitive, but it was a lot of derogatory labels that they placed on it. They didn't understand who we were and what we were doing. So that carries forward. And then, of course, ideas about, of course, from religion has played a role on if you're moving in a particular way, this must be deep, dark, and evil, and all of these things. Actually, it's not. It's empowerment. It's empowering. So that becomes an ongoing challenge, even with our own communities that seem to have this division between if I'm an elder and I wind up my waist, if I'm because I'm a professional all day long, but everyone knows that this professional winds her waist. Does that change that I'm a professional and I'm an intellect and that I can walk in a costume that empowers how my body looks in that particular moment? It doesn't take away from me. We have judgments coming within our communities, but the media chooses to focus on the sexualization, I find, because it kind of continues the stereotypes about how we move and how it's not technique, when all of the things I described are technique. So even that has to be debunked all the time, because the way we hear and respond to rhythms, that alone is a technique and a science in itself.
Everyone is moving towards freedom. That's the energy of carnival, but, beyond carnival, beyond that space, how do we allow ourselves to feel and exist in that freedom through our bodies?
Good question. I think, and I'm thinking about where I'm sitting in a post-secondary space, because sometimes the way my body wants to move, it's not happening in the space that I'm in. Because right now I am in a research mode, but I'm not really moving in a studio space within the department, which is a whole different thing when you're in a dance studies program.
It's like there's no dance in the dance study program.
Right? I'm like, yeah. So the joy of PhD life. But again, for me, I have to create separate spaces externally, so that I can have those emancipatory moments with not only myself, with the musicians and the rhythms that they play. So we have that call and response conversation and relationship, because rhythm is language. We need to speak, not just one conversation, but many conversations. So I find that I have to intentionally create external spaces for myself and for other practitioners to teach, or for, you know, different generations of individuals who intentionally want to learn to come and engage with us and respect what knowledge is being shared. And we're making a body positive space, and even people with different skill sets are welcome into the space. So that has to be mindfully considered as well. For many years, creating externally in whatever space that I can find, so that I can engage in these vernaculars and techniques. Or I also have to use my privilege and use my finances and go abroad to train with teachers, or to intentionally find the spaces where I could continue my learning and my growing and moving with communities, whether it's in North America, whether it's in the Caribbean, whether it is in a conference that has movement in it, or if it's on the continent. So I intentionally have to plan those moments. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The song that we opened up with was Lord Nelson and Cass Dewey Ting, suggested by Miss Coco. Coco, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. Colette Coco Murray is a dance performer, instructor, mentor, and cultural arts programmer, and she is also a PhD candidate at York University. And if you have any more questions about the history of the Toronto Caribbean Carnival, you can listen to our previous episode in our show log. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe to Currently in Dance wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Currently in Dance is brought to you by The Dance Current, with support from Canadian Heritage. The Dance Current gratefully acknowledges Currently in Dance season sponsor Timothy Ziegler and The Shoe Room at Canada's National Ballet School. Our sponsors and advertisers are not involved in the editorial process. The show is produced by Ashley Fraser. Our consulting producer is Nicole Inica Hamilton. Our executive producer is Grace Wells-Smith. Our sound engineer is Chris Dupuis at 1990 Studios. Our editor and composer is Jamar Powell. And I'm AC Mensa. Thank you for listening to Currently in Dance. Subscribe, listen, and don't forget to move.